Good morning, this is Wendy Bauer. Today is August 3rd, 2015, and I will be reading to you today from the Decatur Herald and Review. We'll begin with the article, New Mayor May Be Named Tonight. This is an article written by Allison Petty, a staff writer. Even as the Decatur City Council grapples with filling a mayoral vacancy, it will proceed with the discussion of the Decatur Public Library's future. Tonight is the first meeting since Mayor Mike McElroy's death July 17th from natural causes. After a moment of silence to honor him early in the meeting, the council is slated to enter closed session and discuss an appointment to fill the post. Should the members choose one of their own, that person could be sworn in immediately and serve until the next municipal election in April 2017. The council has until September 14th to fill the vacancy and can choose any qualified resident to do so, according to state law. Later in the meeting, the council will continue with a previously scheduled study session to discuss a proposed arrangement for the library and Macon County offices to share space. Under the plan, the library board would sell the facility at 130 North Franklin Street to the Decatur Public Building Commission for $3.1 million. Instead of paying a lump sum, the commission would essentially purchase the building by giving the library a break on its rent, keeping the rate $615,000 annually for 20 years. County offices would move into unused space on the library's second floor and in its annex building. The Macon County Office Building at 141 South Main Street would be sold to 101 Main Place LLC with the intended purpose to redevelop the building for residential use. Though the consolidation plan has been in the works for more than a year and became public in November, the council discussed it for the first time July 6th. It was unclear whether the council needed to weigh in on the proposal until City Manager Tim Gleason said in May that the city's approval was required. Several council members expressed concern that the deal was not a win for the city. McElroy indicated support for having the city purchase the library building. Several factors affect the council's position. The library facility is recorded on city financial statements as a city asset valued at $4.1 million, though the library board holds the deed. Also, the city still owes about $735,000 in principal of $5.2 million general obligation bonds that were issued in 1998 and refinanced in 2010. Library officials say money was used solely to renovate the facility, while city officials contend that the funds also helped purchase it. Gleason said the purpose of the study session is to review the council's options. This is not a meeting to figure out the history of different things, what got us to today, if you will, he said. It is about the pros and cons of the different scenarios that are available to the council. That's it. Hopefully from there, they'll give me some direction. Gleason said the council could decide to approve the deal as presented, attempt to tweak it, or enter into its own negotiations with the county. He does not plan to make a recommendation. Macon County Chairman Kevin Greenfield, Republican from Decatur, said last month that the deal on the table was the county's one and only offer. He said county officials did not intend to rent space from the city or library board. Gleason said he was aware of those comments, but I'm also confident that if I'm directed by council to engage in conversations with Macon County, I'm confident that Chairman Greenfield and County Board Finance Committee Chairman Jay Dunn would be very accommodating, he said. I'm sure that they would open the door and at least listen. I'm sure of it. And from the latest news from Decatur, kids with BB guns cause damage. Two passing vehicles were damaged and the picture window on a house broken Friday afternoon by juveniles armed with a BB gun, according to Decatur Police. The three incidents in the area of 2000 and 2200 blocks of West Center Street between 2:50 and 3:15 p.m. A woman driver and a male driver had their vehicle's bodywork damaged and a window broken by pellets, and a homeowner said the big window of his house was smashed. The homeowner estimated the window would cost $1,000 to replace. Also, Decatur man wounded by shotgun, manhunt underway. From Decatur. Police are hunting an attempted murder suspect after a Decatur man was blasted with a shotgun Friday night. Reports say the 27-year-old victim was hit in the left forearm and top of his left hand by birdshot from the weapon and was treated at Decatur Memorial Hospital. He told police he had seen a man acting suspiciously in the 2000 block of North 31st Street about 10 p.m. and had followed him in his vehicle when the suspect drove away. Both vehicles pulled over in the 3000 block of East Garfield Avenue, and when the suspect and another man got out of their car, the victim and a family member who came with him decided to leave, and that was when the gun was fired at them. The suspect is described as black, about 20 years old, 5 feet 11 inches tall, and of thin build and wearing all dark clothing. And from Decatur, St. Mary's has healthy-looking crop. St. Mary's, quite contrary, how does your garden grow? Well, you can forget the silver bells and cockle shells, and nobody has laid eyes on any pretty maids, row formation or otherwise. Instead, St. Mary's Hospital gets its garden going with a little help from its friends, which include Decatur is Growing Gardeners Organization, or DIGG, DIG, Eisenhower High School, and Richland Community College. They're growing together to come up with perhaps the most surprising addition to any hospital campus, a vegetable garden. You'll find the St. Mary's version at the eastern end of its 22-acre campus at 1900 East Lakeshore Drive, opposite the Medical Arts Building. Bob Hill, supervisor of Athletic Care, the hospital's sports medicine program, has his office in there. He is also chairman of the hospital's Environmental Stewardship Committee, which is in the business of finding good works to do. Other hospitals in the Hospital Sisters Health System that administers St. Mary's have sought to get away from the pretty but useless monochrome sameness of green grass campuses by planting gardens, and Hill liked the sound of it. Eisenhower is right there, right next door to our hospital. And so I just made a cold call over to Michael Dugan, who was then principal at Eisenhower High School, and we connected immediately, Hill said. The idea was to come up with a vegetable garden that students in a newly sprouted high school horticulture class would tend and look after. They will learn the healthy art of growing fruit and veggies, and the produce will be donated to worthy causes such as Catholic Charities, Good Samaritan Inn, and Northeast Community Fund to feed those in need. The Community Benefit Garden Project got rolling in September, and Dugan, who has since been transplanted to the job of Assistant Superintendent for the Decatur School District, says Richland came on board to help design a curriculum for the kids. They also donated a bunch of the plants being grown. Cultivating a flourishing vegetable garden from scratch is no easy row to hoe, and that's where DIG's Cindy Jackson dug in to help as garden manager. She has been working to get the garden ready with the help of horticulture students from Mercy Gardens, a joint project between DIG and the Good Samaritan Inn that teaches adults how to master the art of making the ground spit forth produce. Jackson, said the total garden area covers just shy of a quarter acre and is divided into different areas, with some given over to summer crops such as tomatoes, peppers, beans, and Swiss chard, which her adult gardeners are working and harvesting now. Another section is being prepared to grow fall veggies such as turnips, mustard greens, radishes, broccoli, peas, and Brussels sprouts, all of which the Eisenhower novice gardeners will take over as part of their fall lesson plan. St. Mary's has laid on a water supply, provided a gleaming new garden shed, and all the tools to get the job done. Jackson, thrilled at another having spot to grow much-needed fruit and vegetables and delighted at the prospect of teaching budding gardeners the leafy ropes, is watering the fecund earth with tears of joy. "This whole thing is just so perfect it makes me want to cry," said Jackson, 37, "and I would just love the idea of every high school having access to a garden like this." Everybody else is equally excited. Hill said it's a win-win for the hospital, which seeks to make its host community a healthier, happier place to live. "Providing food to those who need it while stepping up to teach some of our younger population how to work a garden and grow their own food," he said, ticking off the pluses. "And of course, we're looking at a healthier lifestyle by eating these kinds of natural grown foods. Everything dovetails nicely together." Assistant Superintendent Dugan, who used to teach science, said the whole concept grew on him right away. "It's a terrific idea," he says, noting that harvesting crops on a small commercial scale might open up other learning possibilities down the road. "We've got business and marketing classes too, so that's another facet we could bring in later on." Student homework is no fun if you can't eat it, however, and yet another facet of the learning experience is likely to see the students munching samples of what they grow. But even in the Garden of Eden, there was a serpent, and the St. Mary's Garden snake in the grass is the fact that it's also growing those Brussels sprouts, perhaps the world's most detested vegetable. Dugan, not easily swayed by pleas for mercy, says it may be necessary to enforce that particular learning experience. "Maybe we should make it a requirement of the course. You got to eat your Brussels sprouts," he says. And an update on Lake Decatur dredging from Allison Petty, Herald and Review staff writer. "Lake Decatur dredging still on schedule. As the center of Lake Decatur dredging operations moves farther into the Big Creek area, the project remains on schedule. They haven't run into too many obstructions or anything that's been holding them up, so they've been moving right along," said Jerry Stevens, engineering services coordinator for the city's water management department. 1,388,000 cubic yards of sediment from the lake since the project began in October has been removed, said Stevens, Great Lakes Dredge and Dock. "The one cubic yard is equal to about 200 gallons of material. The total project is expected to increase the lake's capacity by about 30%, officials have said. "Over 1 million cubic yards have been removed in 2015, and 221,000 of that occurred in the first 27 days of July. Terra Contracting Services continued working to increase the capacity of the 523-acre Oakley Basin that holds the sediment," Stevens said. "Crews are raising the height of berms or barriers around the site by 10 feet, allowing it to accommodate the incoming sediment." Unusually wet weather in June robbed Terra of most working days that month. In the first 27 days of July, Terra workers had 11 production days and lost 16. While Stevens said the dredge hasn't turned up any buried cars or weapons, some interesting old bottles have been retrieved by the crews. One Welch's grape juice bottle, for instance, appears to date back to the 1930s. Stevens said the city is compiling a collection of the items, which could be displayed in the future. In an article written by Tony Reed, staff writer for Herald and Review, Civil War tunes, twists and turns noted. It turns out the Civil War was set to music long before television documentaries or Hollywood movies had the same idea. The hit parade that accompanied the Blood and the Glory from 150 years ago was outlined Sunday in a talk called Battle Hymns, The Power and Popularity of Music in the Civil War, presented to a full house at the Rock Springs Nature Center. Christian McWhirter, the assistant editor for the Springfield-based The Papers of Abraham Lincoln Project, was the guide to the marching and foot-tapping songs from both the North and the South. Dixie is widely credited to have been written by a Northerner, Daniel Decatur Emmett, who performed it for the black-faced minstrel shows of the 1850s. And Dixie becomes the unofficial anthem of the Confederacy through the war, McWhirter said. The North had its hot tunes, too, which had some strange twists and turns. John Brown's Body has its roots in a Union Army song poking fun at a Scottish soldier called John Brown. The reference to the radical abolitionist of the same name was a joking play on words. Abolitionist Julia Ward Howe heard a group of soldiers singing the tune and decided it was time to take the lyrics up market. Her famous version, the Battle Hymn of the Republic, eventually got Northern blood racing with lyrics such as, "Trampling out the vintage where the grapes of wrath are stored." But McWhirter said Howe's lyrics only caught fire after the war, when Union veterans sought to recall their glory days with a song that embodied noble purpose. However, nobody was very interested in this song during the Civil War, said McWhirter, 37. I have found almost no instances of any soldiers singing this song. McWhirter, who earned his Ph.D. with a dissertation on the subject of Civil War music, held his audience with a talk rich in detail, illustrated with slides, and played samples of the music itself. I just thought it was wonderful, said Ellen Hant, a retired teacher from Decatur. It helped everyone to appreciate our heritage. McWhirter, who described Ken Burns' music-laced TV documentary as his gateway drug to the Civil War, said soldiers in the days of iPods aren't singing many communal songs anymore. Although you do hear about fighter pilots listening to heavy metal in their headphones and stuff, he said, music is still a motivator. And an article written by Allison Petty, a staff writer for the Herald and Review, titled Kids Let Loose with Boss, Junior, and Senior, starts with a photograph of a number of young children dressed up in costumes on stage. From Decatur, the summer before she entered first grade, Audrey Smith Phillips was very shy. Now 13, Audrey participates in her school's musical theater and choir programs. She's well-spoken and confident in conversation with adults. She even dreams of a career in Broadway, though she acknowledges that acting is a difficult field to pursue. Audrey credits her participation in the Decatur Park District's Best of Summer Stock, BOSS, youth theater program with changing her outlook. Part of the reason my mom made me do BOSS was to try to get me to open up to other people. Now my mom says I'm a little more, she trailed off and chuckled. I've grown a lot due to BOSS. Audrey is one of 109 youth participating in the program this summer, with the final performances at the Decatur Civic Center this weekend. The younger group, ages 6 to 11, staged Dinosaurs Before Dark Kids on Friday night and Saturday afternoon. The older group, ages 11 to 18, have performances of Legally Blonde Jr., the musical, slated for Saturday night and Sunday of this past weekend. They're excited. You can just feel that buzz in the green room and in the dressing rooms. We've spent 6 weeks working on this show, and it's go time, said Christopher Weisenborn, director of the Dinosaurs show and musical director for Legally Blonde. The program began in 1981, and Weisenborg participated as a youngster in the 1990s. He remembers the time fondly and even keeps in touch with some friends he made then. It's just something you take with you, he said. The kids have practiced Monday through Thursdays, with the first week devoted to learning theater technique and vocals before they auditioned, said Marie Jagger Taylor, cultural arts manager for the district. Rehearsals lasted 4 weeks, and then they practiced for a week at the theater with lights, sound, and costumes. These kids get to do things in their school auditorium and cafetorium, but being in the theater is really different and fun. It's a very special occasion, Jagger Taylor said. We talked about what a gift it was, and really, what an honor it is to be able to give back to the public, to the community of Decatur. In addition to their enjoyment of the acting, several participants said they loved getting to know people they might not have met otherwise. "Some of them are some of my best friends," said Claire Campbell, 11. This is Claire's second year in the summer program, and she said she likes everything about it. "I love that we get to work on music and dancing. I love how we don't just act," she said, "we do everything." Brandon Condritz, 11, said he liked his character, Terry, in the Dinosaurs play because of the potential for humor. Brandon enjoys making his parents laugh, and he's good at doing funny voices. This is his second year in the program. "I like that you get to express yourself and have fun with friends and get to play different roles and get to find out more about the world, I guess," he said. Tim Bonk, 16, plays Emmett in Legally Blonde. He had never seen the movie but rented it from the Decatur Public Library once he found out that summer program would be tackling the musical. Tim is homeschooled, so he likes making and hanging out with friends through the Park District theater programs. He's done 2 shows with Boss and 7 with Perform, the winter program. "I just like getting to be so many different people. I like singing, too. Usually people complain when I sing, but not now," he said, grinning. "Now they have to clap." Jager Taylor is quick to credit the staff of both shows for their work directing, choreographing, designing lights and costumes, and creating eye-catching sets. "We have great staff that really enjoys working with youth, and they're passionate about sharing their talents. So it's been a great experience from my perspective," she said. "Now, we always hope that the ingredient of making magic happens. And Emily Steele, a Herald and Review staff writer, brings us the article, "Zoo Hosts Breastfeeding Week Event." Starts with a photograph of a beautiful animal on the in front of the Scoville Zoo. It's a peacock with a number of children taking photographs of the peacock. It's captioned Scoville Park Complex at 71 South Country Club Road in Decatur. From cheetahs and camels to meerkats and monkeys, an exciting adventure awaits visitors at Scoville Zoo. Home to more than 500 animals spanning 6 continents, the zoo also features a petting zoo, carousel, and train. From Decatur, World Breastfeeding Week at the zoo returns again this week, and this time the moms are in charge. The observance runs through August 7th and is celebrating in more than 170 countries. This year's theme is Working Mothers, and one of the goals is to promote baby-friendly workplaces. Decatur has hosted an event in honor of the week for at least a decade. This year's World Breastfeeding Week at the zoo will include vendors, prizes, and a variety of information sessions. The goal is awareness, education, and advocacy for breastfeeding support in our community, event organizer Liz Richards said. Richards, who also leads the local chapter of La Leche League, said they chose to have the event later this year to accommodate working mothers. "We wanted to have it during the time the zoo is open and after hours, so people who work can attend too," Richards said. New this year is a diverse selection of 15-minute presentations starting at 5 p.m. Topics include what's really in breast milk and safe breast milk storage. 2 local moms who invented a new bottle design will be presenting. Federal and Illinois law protects breastfeeding mothers, allowing them break time and private space to pump milk. But not every mother or business knows the rights the law guarantees. Illinois has some of the best breastfeeding and pumping laws in the country, Melissa Kaufman said. Kaufman will be handing out information the local breastfeeding support group she runs on Facebook. In the past, local agencies ran the event, but this year, a planning committee of mothers came together to organize it. The casual event serves as a networking opportunity for mothers and breastfeeding advocates and workers. It's nice to know there is a local community and getting to put faces with names and meeting everyone in real life, Kaufman said. It's nice to see the community support out there. Also by Allison Petty, City Lottery will aid home rehabilitation from Decatur. For the first time since 2011, the city of Decatur will hold a lottery to distribute home rehabilitation assistance. The city has about $500,000 in federal money available for the assistance, which could include help with accessibility, roof replacements, energy improvements, and emergency needs. Residents can submit names at the city's Department of Neighborhood Services, third floor of the Decatur Civic Center, until 3 p.m. August 14th. To be eligible for the assistance, residents must own the home, live within the city limits, and meet income guidelines. We have people who really want to stay in their homes, and we're just trying to make that easier for them, said Rochelle Irons, Director of Neighborhood Services. The high ticket items, your roofs, your furnaces, those are huge items that can be very costly to people who are just trying to maintain day to day. Irons said the city did not hold a lottery in recent years because so many names had accumulated and because a lot of the federal money recently has paid for demolitions. She said $500,000 might seem like a lot, but the money's ability to stretch depends on the extent of repairs needed. By the time you do a rehab for $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, it reduces the amount of money that you have available. We might not be able to help more than 20 people, she said. It just depends on the level of help we're able to give. By comparison, as many as 400 people have submitted names seeking help during past lotteries. If a resident is selected, the city will confirm eligibility, then evaluate the condition of the home and its needs. It has to be feasible. We can't put $100,000 in a house, and it's still not up to code, Irons said. The funding is available through the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development as part of the city's annual allocation of Community Development Block Grant and Home Investment Partnership funding. For more information, contact the city's Neighborhood Outreach Division at 217-424-2797. And we will take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for August 3rd, 2015. Please stay tuned.